Mr. Kern, if I could pot you up here. There we go. Mr. Kern, how are you doing today?
Tremendous, Christian. How are you? Hello, Andrew.
Hey, how are you?
Doing very well. Looking forward to this game tonight. Looking forward to this weekend, of course. But I wanted to open with the big story from yesterday from ESPN about Robert Kraft in the Hall of Fame, which was, I thought, very interestingly timed. You know, we got 1 week into the season. There's all these storylines going around the NFL, and ESPN comes out with their, not really bread and butter, but there was a time where it seemed like they were churning these articles out every other week. A long-form story here about Robert Kraft and his attempts to get in to the Hall of Fame. I heard you speak about this a little bit yesterday, but why don't we follow up on it here? What do you think is the main thing keeping Kraft out of the Hall of Fame?
I think basically it tracks down to there's an anti-patriot sentiment among the voters, and I think it's probably dates back to, 2000 and stretched along the entire course of their dynasty, having mainly to do with the fact that, when they got good, there was a tendency, I think, for the Patriots themselves and the organization to act as if they invented the wheel. And I think that was off-putting, and the continued success of the organization we saw play out between the league and the team in 2007 with Spygate. And I think that rubbed a lot of voters the wrong way, and they continue to cling to it. And it kind of tracked on from there.
So do you think
the bigger story to me
that
is
was a long pause. Jesus.
Well, the bigger story is that there was a story.
Right.
I mean, the gist of the story seemed to be that Robert Kraft deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He's not in the Hall of Fame. The people who work for him keep trying to help him get into the Hall of Fame, and the voters find that unseemly. So now they're definitely not going to let him get in the Hall of Fame. He's going to do so on their agenda and on their timeline. So to me, this was more, it raised more questions to me about the voters and the amount of time invested in talking about the Dynasty book and the Dynasty docuseries as if those weren't going to be done regardless. Robert Kraft got into the Hall of Fame in 2018. Those things were coming out. Those were not efforts to get Robert Kraft into the Hall of Fame. They were efforts, I think, by Robert and by the Krafts, but especially Robert, to say, yeah, I'd love to have the story told the way I view it from the lens of me. And I think that it was done that way, but it had nothing to do with trying to get him into the Hall of Fame.
You done now? Just checking.
Yeah, I'm done. I don't know what direction you guys are going to go with some of the questions. So it takes a second to process exactly what the question is from Christian, so it takes me a second to land the plane.
I got you. Nope, no worries. So just to follow up on that, do you think this article, first of all, I found the article weird because I don't know, do a lot of people care about this outside of New England? Are they breaking down whether, oh my God, Robert Kraft's not in the Hall of Fame? Why is he not in? He's getting screwed. I found the
or
article
he really
weird.
Wants to be
yeah,
in the Hall
he wants
of Fame.
To be. Like, who
yeah,
cares? Yeah. Whatever. But Tom, do you think this helps or hurts his potential to get in the Hall of Fame sooner rather than later?
Well, given the fact that there's however many voters, 50,
yeah,
or is that just for all? Given the fact that there's 50 voters and the way those voters tend to react to things is, well, screw that. You know what? Now they're trying to put pressure on us. Now he's definitely not getting in. Or it can have an opposite effect. I really don't have an opinion as to what this story will do. And I really don't.
Which I appreciate.
I am mystified that the story was written in the way that it was and that the overarching conclusion that Don Van Natta seemed to be driving home was, hey, Kraft really wants to get in the Hall of Fame. Look how hard he's trying. I mean, he definitely deserves to be in, but he looks like a clown trying this hard.
Yeah, and 5,500 words to get to there.
Yeah. not a short read. Tommy, the Patriots taking on the Seahawks at home this weekend. We saw Malcolm Butler is going to be the guy ringing the bell, and that's a nice little troll job there. The Seahawks won their game similar to how the Patriots did. So how do you see this this matchup going? Who prevails on Sunday?
They are definitely a little bit of mirror images, I think, because you have a journeyman quarterback for both teams. Both teams with a rookie head coach. A good running back for both teams. Defenses that are pretty capable. And, if you look closely at what Seattle did offensively last week, wasn't that impressive aside from Kenny Walker's performance, a 34-yard scramble for a touchdown for Geno Smith. But they were 4-for-12 on third down, and of those third downs, they were in third and five or worse on 9 of them. So they're not really a potent offense. It's a good spot for the Patriots to be home, to play against a team that, again, does not have a great rushing defense, or at least did not last year, the Seattle Seahawks. So it's a good spot for them. But, again, it's a four-win team last year that still has a pockmarked and question-laden offensive line, regardless of last week's outcome. So it wouldn't be a stunner if the Patriots don't come out with more points on Sunday than Seattle.
Tom, don't yell at me if you hate the question, but I have a question for you based on three guys in new roles that I think did really well on opening day. And I would say Jerod Mayo, Alex Van Pelt, and Jacoby Brissett all did a really nice job in their debuts and their current roles for the Patriots. Which of those is most sustainable? Which of those do you think was like, yeah, that's who he's going to be in that role for this team?
I think all of them have equal opportunities to be the same guy. I think, you know, with Van Pelt, he is going to at some point not get a throw knocked loose in the end zone by Hunter Henry that was made by Jacoby Brissett. So he might fall behind. He might not get a strip on the goal line from his defense. He might be down in a game.
Mm-hmm.
He'll still be a very good play caller. He'll still be very organized, I think, with what he wants to do. But he's going to see more adversity, as will Jacoby Brissett, because eventually some team is going to load up and say, okay, beat us with your arm. And I think Brissett could, as anyone quarterback could, if they have the artillery offensively. So, I mean, it's all circumstance-based. Who do you think is going to have the most sustained one?
Honestly, I think Jerod Mayo. He's made a great turnaround in my mind. I think he had some little brush fires and ups and downs. I've been thoroughly impressed with him for about the last 10 days with his messaging, something you and I have talked about before. And then something Jacoby Brissett said when he talked to us earlier in the week when he was raving on the plane about, Jerod told us on Tuesday if we did X, Y, and Z, we would win the game. And they went out and did X, Y, and Z, and they won the game. When you start to build that cachet of credibility within your locker room, I think you're well on your way to doing a really nice job as a head coach.
I think he really needed the football to start, because speaking extemporaneously for 4 months straight about things that were not tangible, quarterback competitions, mm-hmm. Competition on the offensive line, how things would look, what things were going to happen, it was becoming difficult for him. And I think that he stepped on plenty of landmines verbally in the offseason, as any first-year head coach might, especially one who is saying, you know what, I'm going to be me. He stepped on plenty of landmines, but now that the football has started, I agree with you, Andy. We all needed things to focus on rather than these intangible things that are just opinion-based.
Yep.
One thing Jerod Mayo said and has said a few times since the game was that we're going to run the ball. Everybody knows it. That's what we're going to do. In the event that Seattle takes that into account and is able to, I don't know, stop the run, what are these backup plans that Mayo was talking about? What do you think those are going to look like, Tommy?
I think there's a lot still left on the table for what the Patriots can do offensively that they didn't even tap into. Demario Douglas has 2 targets last week. Jalen Polk has 1 catch. You didn't see really any jet sweeps, any motion, anything that was very intricate. So I think that if you're going to do that and force the Patriots to throw, yes, they can try to go over the top and, you know, rattle their saber with Tyquan Thornton. That's probably not going to scare anybody. Tyquan Thornton's not going off for 6 and 160. And he's your ex-receiver, really. KJ Osborne's not having that kind of day either. But I do think that they are capable of having that kind of a day from a guy like Demario Douglas, because he is a unique guy to try and deal with. We watched an Andy during camp every single day. When he was on the field, when he was targeted, it changes things. I don't think that they had to go to Demario Douglas last week, so they really didn't. They just said, let's just keep doing what we're doing. But those are the things that I would imagine would be different, and he has to be a bigger part of the offense. And I don't think it's a letdown that he wasn't. It's just his number didn't come up, but it needs to.
I don't know how big you are into spreads and numbers and gambling, but I have found
I, like
Okay. So I like a good buffet spread, but this is a different kind of spread we're going to talk about.
I like them both.
The Seahawks -3.5. I find, and you know I'm not a big, like, homer. That's my podcast partner, Fitzy. I find that a little disrespectful for the way these two teams played on opening day and one team playing at home and another team flying across the country. Are the Patriots being a little disrespected with that number?
Always remember, don't ever forget, the reason spreads are made are just to entice people to put equal amounts of money on both sides so that the bookmakers or Vegas, whoever it is, can make their money on the vigorish. So there's no respect or disrespect in my mind usually involved. It's just trying to take advantage of public perception so that they can get the money balanced. I would not look at the Patriots as, I would probably call this game a pick, or the Patriots a 1-point favorite based upon week one, based upon all the things you said. It's going to be 10 a.m. for Seattle when this game kicks off. That means they're getting to the stadium at 7 a.m. That means their alarm clocks are going off at 5 a.m. Pacific time. That's hard. And it's not a potent team. The Patriots do have an outstanding defense. They came out of week one basically intact, injury-wise. They can run on a team like that. So all those things enter into that in terms of why I would say the spread is off. But they're trying to make the number enticing to people. And they're looking at, well, Patriots won 4 games last year, and it was only 100 hours ago that we thought that they were the worst team in football. So let's not go crazy with trying to make them a favorite here.
All right, we'll leave it right there. Tommy Curran, thanks so much for the time. We'll talk to you again next Thursday.